assignment for me is one that requires that I speak in the first person. I should be required to make references to myself, which I'm somewhat disinclined to do. But the topic is why I must preach. This talk will be certainly different from the ones that I've heard today. The ones I've heard today have been scripture-filled, and they have been very informative and instructive, and I've benefited from them very much. I don't anticipate a lot of questions after this because I don't think there'll be anything for you to ask questions about. But I cannot remember a time in my life when I did not want to preach. Oh, there were a few spots now and then when I became infatuated with a few surface notions, but these soon faded and the recurring dream was always there. One of the family stories is about a childish declaration that I made at Mount Olive Church east of Brookhaven during one of Brother N.L. Clark's summer meetings. Brother Clark was a Mississippi boy who had made good in Fort Worth, but always come back to his native Mississippi for summer meetings. People, including my folks, came from far and near to hear this great man. At the noon hour, after the great lunch spread under the nearby trees, brethren were lounging beneath the trees discussing scriptures and crops with their seersucker pants and galluses on. I took advantage of the empty church building. I was very small. I was in the pulpit yelling and shouting to an imaginary audience. Brother Clark came in to prepare for the afternoon sermon. To say he glanced at me and said, "Son, are you singing?" I replied with stark astonishment at such a foolish question, "No, sir, I'm preaching." To said even the serious Brother Clark smiled. Thus a dream possessed me at a very early age. And why should not the dream become a compulsion? There was every influence and incentive. Oh, no one ever said to me, "Linwood, why don't you become a preacher?" No church or group of churches ever supported me to study the Bible or to make a preacher. They didn't have to. The intrigue was there. But study I did. I studied what I had, the Bible, and what few books that happened to be around the place that Brother Harper maybe had left, or that we might have had on hand. These were great books, and they helped shape my future. I surely didn't have the money to buy books, and no church ever bought a library for me. A Gospel Advocate or a Firm Foundation catalog would come in the mail, and I would search through it, making a mark now and then on a book that I hoped to buy when I got the money. The Church of Christ by a layman, R. Phillips, is a special book to me. I found an old copy in our smokehouse without covers. I didn't know what it was, but I saw that it was a gospel book, so I rescued it, put a homemade job of binding on it, and found out from J.D. Phillips what it was. So I will always have a tender spot in my heart for that particular book. I, along with other preachers of this time, had little to distract us from our studies. We were not fortunate to have a youth rally about once a month. I probably would not have been allowed to attend anyway. At any rate, we would have been at home preparing sermons for the next weekend somewhere, or we would have been in a mission meeting in some schoolhouse or vacant store building. Several churches over the country owe their existence to such efforts as that. This was before the gospel of fun and games became a vital part of making a preacher, or it was before we realized we needed to take an extended course in how to do personal work. So I plowed the long cotton rows and studies at noon and at night and Saturday afternoons, which we were given as a rest time. Another great push in the direction of preaching was the great men who came into our home and who preached at New Salem. These men were held up as our heroes. They were considered the best, the smartest, and the wisest men anywhere to be found. I knew very little of movie stars and great actors. I was deprived. Later, I did hear of Clark Gable, and naturally a few true story magazines would somehow slip into the home circle, and I saw some very beautiful ladies' pictures. Two, I remember, I guess this was my wild streak. I did slip off and go to the show one time and saw the Lone Ranger, whoever he was. But seriously, the names that we honored were H.C. Harper, N.L. Clark, J.D. Phillips, H.E. Robertson, Homer L. King, Homer A. Gay, and later, Fred Kerbo, Irvin Waters, Clovis Cook. Those were the men who helped to make me what I am. My admiration for them was so great that when I graduated from high school, I broke a trend in the Lodestar High School, where it was the Methodist, the Baptist, and sometimes the Presbyterian preachers over and over who always gave the baccalaureate sermon. I lobbied, and because of the love that the senior class had for me, I had Homer L. King to travel from Lebanon, Missouri, to do this honor. I've been Church of Christ all the way. I had made a few simple efforts at appointments, but after graduation, I made my big move, a whole weekend in Lawrenceburg, Tennessee. I shall ever feel close to the Chapel Grove Church, and especially the Orton family, for taking me in as they did. They had two young boys, Billy and James, and two beautiful little twin girls. A terrible war was raging, and I was never given a preacher's classification, we think because of prejudiceness that existed in the community. I kept it appealed, and the war ended with it still appealed. I was scared to death all the time. I made the Lord some great promises, and thus I felt I must preach. I guess one of the first reasons I would give is because of the dream that I had. There are young men and old ones, too, who would have been preachers if they had been given the right push and the proper encouragement. By and large, children like to please their parents. They might not admit it, but they really do. I love to linger around the memories of an old-time mother found in the Old Testament. Listen, "For this child I prayed. Therefore have I lent him to the Lord. As long as he liveth, he shall be lent to the Lord." 1 Samuel 1, 27 and 28. These are the words of a wonderful Hannah of old. As she utters them, she's looking into the face of her newborn baby boy, whom God had given her in answer to her prayer. She is glad with the glorious joys of motherhood, and we in this distant day are interested in her. We lean across the centuries to get a look at her winsome face. We're interested in her. Not because of her cleverness, though I'm sure she was clever. We're interested in her not because she was a leader in society. We're interested in her because she was a mother, a successful mother. The attitude and conduct of this mother toward this child caused him, I'm sure, to become the great Samuel, the seer, who was one of the greatest voices that God had through all the annals of the history of God's people. Old Testament history would be impoverished were his deeds and words removed. I know that Samuel could say, as long as he lived, the words of an old song, "Mother's prayers have followed me." Do you have a son in your home? Have you prayed for him? Does he know you are praying for him? Can he sing the song, "I heard my name in mother's prayer"? God pity the child who's reared in a prayerless home. Hannah said, "Therefore have I lent him to the Lord." Have you lent your child to the Lord? I think there are numbers of parents today who sit back in the audiences from time to time while their sons preach the gospel with power and say, "For this child I prayed, therefore have I lent him to the Lord." Make a preacher out of your boy. Make a good one. Tell him there are still such things as faith. And when we sing, "I'm walking by faith," mean it. He might not be as financially secure as some of his peers, but his riches will far exceed silver and gold and material things. There will always be the satisfaction of knowing he pointed someone to Jesus, and two, you can feel that somebody will step over the portals of that four-square city because he preached the gospel. Besides, there will be countless numbers who will feel comforted and edified because he preached. When the Lord wanted a great leader for his people long ago, he providentially kept Moses from the death that hundreds of other Israelite boys suffered,
and dropped him into the arms of his own dear mother, the greatest teacher that any young preacher ever had. And I'm sure that her teachings played a great part in his making his choice for God. Timothy was complimented by the great Apostle Paul for having had a godly mother and grandmother who taught him the Word of God. Paul admonished him to ever be mindful of those from whom he had learned the Holy Scriptures. Who are the heroes in many homes today? Rambo, Rocky, or even worse? Who is looked up to? Who is mentioned with esteem? The millionaires, the big businessmen of the community. Nothing's wrong with respecting and even appreciating honorable men in the business world. We need them. But when that is spoken of in such admirable terms as to give the impression that that is the greatest goal in life, you need not expect many preachers to come out of such a climate as that. Another thing that defeats the purpose to make good, sincere gospel preachers, and that's to constantly be putting emphasis on money and the ways to make it. It's little wonder dedicated preachers ever come out of some congregations. They let everybody know by their actions and desires, and even words sometimes, that the young men in the community who are making the most money is the one who have achieved life's greatest goal and is the real success in life. That is embarrassing when you are a preacher hardly making ends meet because you love the cause. Did you ever see that preacher, or I should say that ex-preacher, who turned aside from the cause because he got a good opportunity to rake it in? Did you ever see him take time out of his busy circle and grace a gospel meeting one night? Have you watched the brethren flock around him and hang up on his every worldly word of wisdom, preachers included? Have you seen the brethren show how they admire such genius and listen and slap their knees in hearty support of his business advice and his antidote of success? Some of the brethren who barely made it to the meeting and who've driven miles to support the meeting don't even get noticed sometimes. They maybe don't even get a handshake. Such things have a negative effect on those who are trying to preach the gospel. In answer to the question about one ceasing to preach, I have this to say. It's a dangerous thing to become a preacher, in a way. I cringe when I see people taking it so lightly. I have never believed it was just a job, say, like selling insurance or running a grocery store and so on. It is more like a life. It's your life that you live. And I don't believe a preacher can ever stop preaching the gospel by heaven's approval. Now, I'm not saying that his style and type of activity cannot be changed. If he has been a traveling preacher, he might need to limit the circle of his work. Domestic and health reasons may require one to curtail his widespread labors. But I believe a real preacher who started out with the proper reasons and motives to begin with will never stop preaching as long as he can possibly do it. He might not be able to travel to California, but maybe he can go to the crossroads somewhere nearby and preach. It just might be that the latter would be the more fruitful of the two anyway. If any man sees an opportunity and does not do it because he's not under contract or is not being paid at the time, then he's preaching for hire. It is certainly not my purpose to imply that preachers should not be paid and supported for their work. The Bible is abundantly clear on that matter. But we preachers have a certain responsibility just as a Christian. And we're expected to do that, whether we are working for a certain church or not, are being paid or not. It was my privilege to live in the home of a man who was a preacher. He was not a supported preacher in the usual sense of the word. He worked for his living for the Texaco Oil Company. And his name was the late beloved Tom E. Smith of this great state. No preacher. Hear me, no preacher ever worked any harder for the church than Brother Tom did. Along with his selling of insurance, which he did as a second job each evening, he always invited people to church and engaged them in Bible conversations. This resulted in Bible studies, which he held as a result. He was constantly engaged in preaching funerals and performing weddings and other things pertaining to the church. When I preached his funeral, I told the vast audience gathered there that day that there was one of the greatest full-time preachers that I ever knew. During vacations, he often held gospel meetings for some small church somewhere. As Paul made tents at Corinth, he preached also, and I have seen many preachers of this kind do valuable work for the church. I know there are cases when preachers are not supported sufficiently, so the alternative sometimes is to just stop preaching. The church should be ashamed when it allows such to happen. But even so, I would not stop preaching. Even if I became a field hand, I would still keep preaching. I did it one time. Now you might have the distinguished title of full-time preacher. But like I said, Paul was not always a full-time preacher according to the modern connotation. He made tents, but he kept on preaching. In many cases, you will preach just as much as when you were doing it full time. By and large, I have seldom seen the brethren let a fellow fall into destitution if he were deserving, or rather if he were delivering the goods and doing his best. I remember a couple of years ago at Jacksboro, Texas, I was holding a little meeting for the little church there. It was small and weak and threatening to close its doors. At the request of the brethren for something to be done, I volunteered to hold them a meeting. I had been informed that they were unable to do much towards support. The church in Bridgeport paid for a motel for me, and we had a fine little meeting. Several were restored. I was as happy as a hog in slop. On next to the last night, a brother from Wichita Falls walked up and handed me a check. I refused it and told him that I was all taken care of and was not expecting support from any church. And besides, I had been credited in heaven with it, I hope. He stuck it into my pocket and said, "I know all about it. We probably would not have given it if it had been any other way." I was deeply touched. I could have gotten by without the money very easily, but the attitude of the brethren was beautiful. I have this to say to young preachers. Prove yourselves. Prove your worth. Don't constantly be picking fault with the brethren. In some isolated cases, the brethren may need rebuking. In some cases, they've given us more than we deserve. Learn to be grateful. It's a privilege to preach the gospel. Regardless of whatever it may take, it's a privilege. I've seldom seen brethren neglect to support a deserving work. Sometimes, if I take on more responsibility than I can handle on the given support, then it's really not the brethren's fault. It's my mismanagement. However, the brethren should work out some solution, and I believe they will. But if we don't like preaching, if we don't like the setup, if it's against our style and we just cannot stand it, then preachers should quit. Not be berating the cause constantly or putting the brethren down. Just get out. Paul told Timothy to endure hardness as a good soldier. There is some hardness that we are commanded to endure. We have an old saying that goes something like, if you can't stand the hot grease, get out of the kitchen. Even with all the persecution that Paul endured, see his catalog of trials in 2 Corinthians 11. He still could say that he thanked the Lord that he counted him worthy and put him into the ministry. He was grateful that he could preach. In fact, no one should undertake to preach the gospel unless he knows what he's doing. He should have a good understanding that it is not simply packing a suitcase and taking a trip with some other young fellow who doesn't know much more about it than you do, playing more than you study, going only to the interesting places where the crowds are and the young people are having a social, instead of going down to the end of the lane in the backcountry or to that little group in some faraway city where they need desperately someone to teach them the gospel. No better lesson could be stamped upon the hearts of all of us who preach than the story of Jeremiah. Here was a man who felt he had a message that he just must tell. He was God's prophet. None of us have ever preached in conditions so hostile and unreceptive as he did. In fact, they disliked him and his message so much, they tried about everything to stop him. He was abused, he was tormented, and put into a well and left to die. And it really had its negative effects on him. Actually, for a moment, that is, listen to his word once again. Let it ring into the heart of every gospel preacher who has ever entertained the notion of desertion. O Lord, thou hast deceived me, and I was deceived. Thou art stronger than I, and hast prevailed. I am in derision daily. Everyone mocketh me, for since I spake, I cried. I cried violence and spoil, because the word of the Lord was made a reproach unto me, and a derision daily. Then I said, I will not make mention of him, nor speak any more in his name. But his word was in my heart as a burning fire shut up in my bones, and I was weary with forbearing, and I could not stay. Jeremiah 20, 1 and 9. Although I know this was the case with an inspired prophet of God, and his case is in a special class, yet, in a more modified sense at least, we must have the same attitude as preachers of the gospel. I have known preachers in my time who almost duplicated this experience of Jeremiah. But let me point out that this can be done only by those who really have it in their heart. This can be done and will be done only by those who are for real. That last statement from the lips of the weeping prophet really weighs on our hearts today. Take it to heart, fellow preachers. And I could not stay. This burning fire kept him from quitting. That same desire and attitude will motivate us today also. I give attention to the question. What attitude motivated Paul's statement in 1 Corinthians 9 and 16? Let us notice the passage. For though I preach the gospel, I have nothing to glory of, for necessity is laid upon me. Yea, woe is unto me if I preach not the gospel. I give the comments of the commentary by F.C. Cook. Probably the sense is, he says, for I should set forth the gospel, whether by preaching or by teaching or even by writing, not possible for me is boasting. I glory in this only, that while I do the work of an evangelist, I support myself by mine own labor. As to my evangelistic work itself, no possibility of glorying in that, for a necessity is laid upon me, my singular call from Christ. When he appeared to me near Damascus, marks me singular as an extraordinary responsibility. Preach I must, and that the gospel, for woe is me if I do not set forth the gospel to the end. I believe this gives it as clearly as we can find it explained. Paul's statement cannot be accepted in face value by us who preach today. He, like Jeremiah, was in a special class. He dared to preach the gospel and felt a woeful condemnation resting upon him because of his singular situation. The necessity that was laid upon him, it was due to the miraculous call that had issued forth to him as an ambassador to the Gentiles on his road to Damascus. In a very modified way, I can and should be possessed with the same urgency to preach, but my work is not as important nor as demanding as his was. In a lesser sense, the thought applied to the pioneers who preached. In one account, Brother Ben Franklin tells about the hardships he faced in getting to an appointment to preach. He had to swim a swollen river that was icy cold, and he even chronicled this statement, "Woe is me, if I preach not the gospel." His case was not the same as the Apostle Paul's, yet it was more so than mine today, because if Benjamin Franklin had not made that appointment, there were people in that day and age who may never have heard it again. They were blessed, if you please, for having an incentive to go as Jeremiah did. They could really feel that they were useful, and yes, even important. There's no telling how great our good preachers could be today if they had honorable incentives to bring them to preach. Think how demanding it would be if you could justly suppose that you would have a house full of people who had never heard the truth before, and you could entertain some hope of converting them. It's little wonder that we preachers do as well as we do sometimes. We answer the commitment to come hold a meeting. When we get there, the leader's children are off at some school to do the first night. One of the leaders is off on vacations, perhaps. Brethren are not too excited. After all, they just had a meeting 3 months ago. They have been having a preacher come in twice a month ever since. And they have another one booked in a couple of months. So you just go through the motion. That's about all you can say. Now, brethren, I really cannot feel woe is me if I didn't hold that meeting. In fact, I've wished I were not, or rather, I've wished I was at home a number of times. And my preaching partners have felt the same way, if they would admit it. Because we knew there were any numbers of preachers who would come if we did not. And I really doubt it would be such a big deal anyway. Many would not even be there if they could find anything else to do. So naturally, there are always a few who will be faithful and will want to hear the gospel. So for this few, we will always try to keep faith and keep going on. We who preach today certainly cannot feel the great urgency and thrill of preachers that our predecessors felt in other years. They're getting fewer and fewer, it seems, but even now we have our moments of exhilaration. Now and then there is an honest one who hears the gospel at the hands of some of us and demands baptism for the remission of sins. Then too, it's thrilling to see our own who grow up to maturity signal the fact that they have not heard in vain, but now want to be numbered with the Lord's faithful few. But for these rewarding experiences, we certainly would despair. But thus it is that I must preach. Two, as we grow older, and the thrill of being noticed as a preacher, or of just standing before an audience has waned, then we begin to think of how it will be after we're gone. Will there be others to carry on the work and cause that we have labored so long for? Will the churches stand true and firm for the truth and wage a warfare as in our lifetime? Those thoughts press themselves upon our hearts. Then it is that we feel we must work harder. We feel that we are running a race with the setting sun that is already past the meridian and starts its descent into the west. Already shadows obliquely fall across the path. In such times, I feel I must preach. I must instill in younger preachers the love of the truth, the love of the church, the love of the old-time way, the paths our fathers trod. Thus, I must preach. The last trip the beloved H.C. Harper made to my home congregation found him in ailing health. Indeed, it was on that trip that as he journeyed on to California, he was stricken and was sent home in a Pullman car. Before he left, my grandfather insisted that he see Dr. Butler, our old family doctor. When he was examined, the doctor advised him that his condition demanded rest and retirement. He should go home. With bowed head and quiet voice, he said, "There is so much to do, and such a short time in which to do it." He was speaking of the inroads made, being made into the brotherhood by a digressive brethren of the Cups and Sunday School faction. He felt he must preach. These are a few reasons why I must preach. I've never taken myself too seriously. I'm aware of my limitations. I really am thankful for whatever the church has given me. I'm ever thankful of the work the church and the brethren have given me through the years. Truly, I felt very undeserving. This road began a while ago down in a cotton patch in the poorest state in the Union. Things have not gone as I had planned them at all. Great and many mistakes have been made, and I certainly do not set myself up as an example of why people should preach. I've been more disappointed in myself than in anybody else, perhaps. But the Lord let me preach, and I have never, ever considered it a sacrifice, but an exalted privilege. Although I would compare my feeble beginning, my lack of finances, and my lack of many things with just about anybody today, I have been on the verge of destitution as I now look back. But it was unknown to me at the time, for I was unaware that I lacked much. And when I was aware of it, I didn't mind much, for I had known all along that I just didn't have what others had, and it was not intended to be that way, and there was just no big worry about it. I was never too bothered that I didn't have the clothes, the looks, the advantages that some had when we were beginning, the town folks, for instance. Now all those things that mark my beginning, the borrowed money, the borrowed suitcase, borrowed pants, the trip to the bus station on the Puffwood truck, missing the bus because the station was closed at midnight with my suitcase inside, the walk home about dawn all the way from town, my attempt to give up but Carter Smith would not let me, all of these are part of a sad, sweet memory. Brother Harper used to say, a rough sea makes a good sailor. There are many things that I have not accomplished. I have many plans yet unfulfilled. But 45 years he has protected me and let me preach the gospel. So I feel I must preach. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Brother. We started talking about this theme of the church in 20 years and the necessity of preaching and what our message and attitudes would be. The first thing that came to my mind was for Linwood to share some of these things. Of course, those that have been with Linwood and traveled with him have known these things. I'm not, ashamed to be affected at telling you that there are many times that we traveled and down the road back from a gospel meeting or sat in his kitchen at home and he told me these things. That's why I preach. And that's why I must preach. Questions?
Memory serves me right. It's been about 11 years since I heard you preach. First time. And I wasn't a member. And I thank God that I was able to hear you preach. Because, as you know, you had a lot of effect on me. The first gospel preacher that I ever heard. And I don't think I'd be where I am today if it wasn't for Linwood Smith and his desire to preach. And I just hope and pray that I can set the example of preaching to others that you have for us. There's many things, Linwood, you've done, and you know that. But I just feel as a tribute to you and for these people to hear me tell them that I appreciate you and what you've done for me and all of us. Not enough can be said. I just thank God for you and for your desire to preach.
Thank you, God. Brother, I don't pretend this to be a session for compliments. We've got questions.
Linwood, what has happened that it seems to me that a lot of young fellows today that want to preach think that it's some sort of a lark? And you've had a lot of young men traveling with you, and you seem to have an eye for when somebody's going to be good stuff. At least good men have traveled with you. But, you know, the problem that I see today is that it seems like preaching is that like a pretty glamorous life. I don't picture it that way myself, but I think a lot of young folks
They don't get it from me.
Well, it's been stated earlier in this meeting, if a young man gives a sermon in his home congregation and he's good, people say, let's make a preacher out of him. And all of a sudden, you've got a church that's willing to give that man bukus of money. And he goes out here and he's having a good time. And the work of the gospel is being neglected. What do you suggest? How do we fight that and get back to saying, let's get men that want to preach the gospel?
All right. One of the things I'd say is for brethren to stop getting up and pleading young preachers' cause all the time and berating brethren for not encouraging young preachers. Now, sincere encouragement is fine. That's good. But what do they need that they're not getting today? They've got tenfold more than we ever had. What is it they need they're not getting today? They're being paid by some congregations to just sit with a Bible in their lap and read. We plowed cotton fields and hoed corn and sawed wood and did everything else and came home and read the Bible and got up sermons by a coal oil lamp. It's like you said, it's not a lark. And it's a lie. That's what I said. It's a lie. Now, there's nobody that thrills to see a young preacher bloom and make a success any more than I do. But it's not just a vacation. It's not just to pack up a suitcase and run around and play all the time. And brethren need to realize that people who don't prove themselves, well, they just need to be put into something else. Throughout the country, I find everybody just about has a following. Everybody across the country has someone who admires them, maybe an aunt, uncle, or cousin, or girlfriend's daddy, if you please. And I've seen fellows called and put to work that couldn't any more preach than they could run an airplane. But they just happened to get lucky and have somebody in that congregation that liked them. They sat down there and drew a weekly support. And they didn't do enough studying and they didn't do enough actual preaching to fill a thimble while they were down there. And it spoiled them. And then I've seen others go to some congregations where they didn't do one single solitary thing while they were there except go to church and get up and make a little talk on Sundays. I've seen the brethren give them contacts and tell them, you go see this. And they never go the first time I've had the brethren tell me that and come to me crying about it. I said, that's your fault. That's not the boy's fault. That's your fault. I said, you're going to spoil him here and ruin him for the next place he goes to. Because he's going to think he can do that everywhere he goes. And to preach the gospel, fellas ought to be workers and they ought to be people who study him. Sincerely try to work. And you just don't begin preaching because somebody else didn't want to preach it. And because your best buddy started preaching, you want to go to preaching too so you can go along. I have all the confidence in the world in our gospel preachers. When they're really trying to do what's right, the brethren do too.
I got a situation, you might say. A young man, which is a very good speaker, converted into the truth a couple, 3 years ago. He's become a fantastic leader in the congregation. He expressed his opinion to me, or he had the desire, okay, to preach the gospel. I knew this young man's situation, and I simply told him, because he's got great obligations. I told him the situation. I told him 1 year he might be supported good, and the next year he'll fall away like crazy. And then he's going to wonder where these, how he's going to make these bills and stuff. Well, I reason with the man this way. You're doing a great work. You're going to the various congregations to help them out. And you can do a great work right in this area and still maintain your situation or your job that you've got. And the thing that I'm very interested in is to help some of these people develop into elders and so on in the church. You see, we need leaders there as well as we need
preachers. We've covered that. Yeah,
do you think that I made a mistake by doing this?
No, sir. That was covered this morning. I think it'd be well for him to stay in his home area. That's one of the flaws of the system we've got today. Like somebody said today, first thing they do is, Ronnie said, is the minute they start making any improvement, they jump up and run way off over yonder. In fact, we've got a little place right there at home, Collins, Mississippi. And they just barely have enough to carry on. They're wonderful people. But now their young men have left home and started going somewhere else. Many of them meet somewhere else after we tried to build up the church. Even got a preacher and kept him there 2 years for them. They don't seem to have the sense of dedication to go back home to their home congregation as much as they ought to. Now, I realize that in cases of jobs and so on and so forth, people have to get out where they can find work. I'm aware of that. The one thing I'd like to say while I'm on this particular matter, and that's this. I've never been a fellow to come down so hard on people who are doing what I indicated in here, part-time preaching. I never have. In fact, the business, those are some of the greatest preachers we've ever had in all of our history of the church, from Alexander Campbell on down, were considered by today's standard as being part-time preachers. Campbell had other industries that he ran, as well as preaching. And many other people did too. Like I said about Brother Tom E. Smith. And like I said about a lot more. In fact, a young fellow going somewhere to work, there's nothing in the world that would be any better for him to do than to get him a little job while he was there, especially a single person. Get him a little job while he was there to keep himself occupied and employed, to keep himself busy. Because now this full-time stuff we talk about, now listen, it's not full-time stuff. There's just so much you can do in a village and in a little town somewhere. You're not working all the time with that, and these boys all know that. If it is, and if you can find something to do all the time, well then, certainly do it. But I know places where the young preacher spends most of a lot of his time visiting over yonder in another community, going to another congregation, attending meetings all around over the country, and so on and so forth. And also, there's something about just getting out and doing a little work once in a while that's good for a fellow anyway. Never did hurt anybody. In fact, it's helped a lot of people. When I'm tired in my body, I can come in and I can sit down and I can do more study than I ever could if I've just been lounging around all day long.
Didn't you tell me one time that if you've really got the message in your heart and you're really preaching it, that the brethren are going to get behind you? You're not going to have to.
That's what I say here. There are some rare cases where brethren don't do the duty. I know that. Of course we know that. And sometimes brethren need some exposure before the brotherhood so the folks will know who he is and what he's trying to do. But I don't know of very many places, of very many works that's deserving and that really is where people are trying, but the brethren didn't rally to it, really get behind it and want to see it go, because the brethren should know that whatever happens over yonder is to my benefit as well as if I'm a part of that congregation, because it's the cause wherever it's being preached. I don't believe anybody can ever really quit preaching once he starts to preach. once he ever gets the love and the desire to preach. Like I said, he may not be able to travel around the rest of his life, but get out, preach locally, preach around your home. Find you an empty store building and get in it and preach and hold it. You'd be surprised at what you could do sometimes. Many of the boys right here in this building started out preaching that way. Johnny Elmore, Leon Fancher started preaching that way. Leon Fancher was behind some of the rest of the boys in ability. Leon got out away from the big congregations and went down yonder in Arkansas and around in some of the other places down there amongst some of those small congregations that didn't have a preacher, couldn't have a preacher, couldn't afford a preacher. Man, they thought he was the greatest man they'd ever met in their life, and he probably was. They hadn't seen very many, you know. Leon probably was the greatest they'd ever seen. And I'm not putting Leon down. In some circles, he's one of the best I've ever heard. In personal work, he was just about the best. But I tell you what, as he began to make progress, he began to grow, the people began to use him, and he made a good preacher. Then the congregations that had a good treasure, a house full of people, had good singers, hired him and took him out of there and said, come preach for us. Or he was doing a lot of good mission work, establishing churches.
You know, I remember back when I was very concerned about my delivery and my style and all that sort of stuff, but you just told me you've got to become your message. Can you just talk a little bit about that, just becoming your message?
Self-effective, you've got to just get into your sermon, get into your speech, and lose yourself in it. And just say it. Just say it like you're excited about it, like you really mean it. I know Raymond, when he started, Raymond has two voices. He has a high voice and he has a low voice, you see. So he started preaching, he wanted to be basso, you know, he wanted to be macho. He was in his low voice. He couldn't hear me because of the full seat back. And the Church of New Salem's a pretty good sized congregation, pretty good sized building. I just told him one day, coming back, I said, now you just want to get out of that if you expect people to hear you now. I said, you're going to have to pitch your voice, and you're going to have to speak so people can hear you. He did. Get on up there in his high voice, and he screamed pretty good.
Appreciate your words. Other than the obvious fact that young men who want to preach need to have a knowledge of the Bible like the back of their hand. What are some other things that you recommend that we learn to help young men who want to preach or young men who are preaching? You know, education and such forth.
Besides the knowledge of the Bible? You said besides the knowledge of the Bible?
Yeah, what other kind of education would you recommend, like speech classes or things like that, for example?
Convenient to take a speech course, I would take a speech course, you know, of some kind, if it's the kind that's going to do you good. I mean, you know, you'd have to get the right kind. Some speech courses are going to do you good work, you know.
What do you think of class psychology courses?
Oh, that's a good idea. You're just on another subject altogether, as far as I'm concerned. I just got horse sense. But learn the Bible and read it all the time. Just read. And you've got to discipline yourself, and you've got to want to preach. And besides knowing the Bible, then want to preach. You know, Paul said, "Be ready." Paul said, "I am ready." I used to preach a sermon on it. I'm ready. I'm ready to preach the gospel to you at Rome. Also, I used to break that up. Paul said, "I'm ready."
He said, I'm ready to preach. I know a lot of preachers who are not ready to preach. Until it gets just the place they want to go and time they want to do it and so on and so forth. Well, you know that wasn't Paul. He went to you that are Rome also. He went forever. In other words, I guess just conviction. Conviction would be the thing that you would say. You just get out and do the best you can for the cause of Christ.
In other words, if a person really wants it bad enough, he's going to work for it. He'll make the preacher.
He will. He will. He wants to badly enough. He may not be as good as his role model, but he'll make a preacher in his own right. He'll be a person who will do something valuable in his own way, and the Lord will use it. I believe that.
Thank you.
There was a young preacher, and he wasn't quite as gifted in the pulpit as some other young preachers of his area, I might say. He came into my community. I wasn't at home at that time, but he preached at the church in Pearl Haven, Mississippi, Brookhaven, part of Brookhaven. And when I came in, one of my cousins was telling me about this young man staying with him. And he said that he walked into the room one day without knocking. He didn't realize he was in there. So he walked into his room one day, and he was on his knees beside the bed, praying. And it impressed him very much. That young man's an old preacher now, and he's in this building tonight. And when he told me that, I said, well, he'll make it. He did make it. There's Jerry Cutter sitting back over there. And it takes a lot of that. And you don't need to be ashamed of being religious. Some folks don't want to be religious. They want to be macho, not religious. It's my understanding that a young preacher should look like a preacher. He ought to act like a preacher. And he ought to be a preacher. Conduct himself like one. When he's driving his car, when he's out with the young folks, when he's in the church building or wherever he is. And another thing, when a fellow's a young preacher, he's supposed to be just a little different from the average run of the mill. Unless the run of the mill is awful good people too. But usually they're not. Young preacher started traveling with me. He talked to me about it. I said, now you're asking me about traveling with me. I'm not asking you to travel with me. I said, now let's get that straight. You are asking me. He said, that's right. Said, all right. Now we're gonna have some agreements here. I said, I told him what I expected out of him. He's gonna be a young preacher. And I said, travel with me. I said, now you don't have to do this, but you don't have to travel with me. That's what I expect if you're going to travel with me. If not, well, then just go on to wherever you want to. And I told him what I expected of him in the way he dressed. In other words, I don't think it looks too preachery for a young preacher to walk to a gospel meeting with a pullover shirt on with Go Oklahoma, a big red, or whatever, written all the way across the front of it or on the back, or Ole Miss, or whatever. Looks to me like he's advertising something besides his business that he's in. For some of these, I've quit preaching going to Medlin now.
Could I ask a question? Right. Do you see a difference in flattery? Courage.
Absolutely. And I think Brethren ought to be very careful about that. The fact of business, flattery doesn't help any young preacher. Flattery is against a young preacher, or old preacher too, for that matter. But particularly young preachers. It's dangerous. they didn't do well, don't tell them they did. Tell them in a nice way, as nice as you can, that you appreciate their awareness or something, but you're a little off tonight. Not as well as I've heard you do before, or something like that. I heard a young preacher preach down at Sulphur one year. Let's see, who was he now? I can't remember. He's a pretty good young preacher. Yeah, Randy Ballard. And he made one of the biggest messes I ever heard. And so when I saw him, he came up to me and spoke to me, of course, just like he always did, just as sweet and nice as he could be. And I said, Randy, you ought to be shy and ashamed of yourself tonight. And he said, well, I said, you haven't studied your lesson. I said, you didn't study that lesson tonight. And I said, and it really came through, too. He said, no, I didn't. Well, I could have just as easily said, that was fine, Randy. That was a great sermon. And I didn't do it to be ugly to him either. He knew that. But I heard him do good. And I told him what he did. So, like I said, I put myself up as a model of how to do. But as Johnny says, there is a difference between sincerity, compliments, and flattery. If you can compliment a young preacher, compliment them because they really need it and they really are benefited by it. And they'll go home and think about that all night long. I know I did. The first few times I preached, I'd go home and I'd relive the whole audience. Anybody said anything to me, I'd go over it 100 times in my own mind. Never forget the first time they called on me to dismiss. I didn't hardly sleep that night. I put a dismissal over all night. TV? I know what you're going to say.
Are you going to say it? No, you can answer that if you want to.
I was telling GV when he was down at the other day about the time that I went to preaching for money. And I believe the Lord chastened me. I printed the second song book, that old black book. And so it almost just ruined me because I had to get a loan at the bank. And I didn't get any meetings. I had a note to make every month. About a $200 note every month. And I just didn't have anything to pay for. I told Mama, I said, I'm going to take a preaching trip. I'm just going to go around and preach a little bit. I'd seen others do it, you know. With a degree of success, I might add. Because I know what we gave him. And I'll tell you, I took a trip. And I didn't get enough to pay my bus. They would pat me on the back and they'd say, Lenwood, that's the finest I've ever heard in my life. Come back again sometime. I went back home and I told Mama, I said, well, I reckon that's the Lord's way of telling me that you're not supposed to preach for money because I said, I sure did get it. And I reckon that was good.
That's right.
Well, we think we are. We're in trouble.
Yeah.
There's nothing new in it. And if it is, well, it'll bear looking into. You know, our feet are all clay. So, kind of by that, like Brother Gay's article he wrote in the Old Paths Advocate many years ago. Go back and get that. I wish everybody would read. He wrote about three series on I wish. Didn't give much scripture, but he just wrote through there about obvious things that everybody knew anyway. I wish brethren would do this. I wish brethren would do that. I wish the brethren wouldn't use wine on the communion table so that when they come home from church, they don't know whether they've been to church or to the or down to the bar, you know. He wrote a lot of things like that on the title, I wish. And I thought the last one he wrote was the funniest thing I read. He started off by saying, well, he says, a lot of folks are writing me and telling me, Brother Gay, I wish you'd write more on I wish. And he said, well, I wish more folks felt that way.
Ever since I was just a little fella, I guess, well, I put this way, as far back as I can remember, you're in my thoughts, in my memory. And I think the reason I'm here today partly is as much due to you as it is my parents, because I remember you sitting around and telling us just such as what you've been talking about tonight. And you know, the dreams and the thoughts that I had about being able to do those things someday, I think that played a really important role in my life. And I think G.B. hit it on the head when he talked about our respect for our older preachers. And I think that's something we've lost. You know, they were the stars when I was a little boy. They were the stars of the church and of my entire life. Now, there were a lot of big names back then when I was a kid growing up. The United States was in very turbulent times. You know, always, the ones who were looked upon favorably and who were impressed on me were people that I heard about when I was a kid. And I'm kind of like GB. There's nothing new. There's no new cause of the champion. I mean, now, it's the gospel. That's all there is to it. And these fellows that think they're going to come in and solve things that fellows like you and Ronnie and Dad and different ones have been working on all their lives, you know, that those kind of things, it's just not going to happen.
It's not us. It's just that it's been there all the time.
It's been there.
And it was there before we did.
So I just, you know, I think that...
Well, there's nothing that's any more heartwarming to me than to hear a kid like Stanley say that, because... as he says, he's known me ever since he could recognize anybody, because I was in his home ever since he was born. And in his daddy's home, not too long after he was born, really, as far as that goes. So many of the young folks are just like family to me, as far as that goes.
Just summing up my remarks, I would admonish all preachers, young and those that are thinking about preaching, to gain all that you can from our older preachers. They have treasures for you that you can't get anywhere else. Get as much as you can out of them. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
One last thing, if nobody else has a question. There's a lot of young preachers out here that you're talking to tonight. And what I'm most concerned with is telling them what our message must be in the next 20 years, the things we must be preaching.
Well, it's like these two, three boys have alluded already. 20 years from now, there'll still be nothing new. There may be a lot around about us that's new, but we won't have any new solutions. And that's what so many younger fellows need to learn today. That it's just the old story, and that's all there'll ever be. And I don't know of any time in all the world when a young preacher can distinguish himself any more than today by just getting his Bible down, getting some of those old fundamental books that those pioneers preached
learning that and preaching the basic doctrine that made us the people that we are today, and go to bombarding the world with that in every meeting you hold. Give up these little temperance sermons. Give up these little devotion talks. Give up these little sweet, sweet talks. I don't mean every time you get up you've got to preach baptism, but I mean generally throughout a meeting. Interweave that in to where the folks can know that we are those fellows they used to call Camelites right down the road down yonder. When our old preachers preached that, more people were baptized than ever before in my lifetime. And folks are always wondering today why we quit baptizing folks. I'm going to tell you one of the reasons why, folks, and that's because the folks have quit seeing a reason to be baptized anymore today. Sometimes you go through a whole meeting with some fellas and you don't even hear the church preached on. You don't even hear baptism emphasized except just in the plan of salvation, just mentioned. And listen, the generation's growing up all the time. Even in your own house, there's little boys and girls growing up in your own house. When have they heard a real sermon on the establishment of the Lord's church? Let them see the glory and beauty of that up beside of the church that their buddies go to in school. And the rest of the things. You can't beat that. That's what made us the people that we are today. And when we quit doing that, we're not going to be a people anymore. We're going to do just like the Sunday school church is threatening to do. We're going to go drifting off into the Christian church and into digression and into sectarianism and everything else. And of course, they're threatening to do that today with the grace movement and all of these things. And 20 years from now, since Raymond called me about this, I got to thinking. I'm still preaching some of the sermons tonight that I preached 20 years ago. I went back and began to look at some of my record books, and I noticed where I preached 20 years ago, where I was, and I began to just check up and see, now, what's the difference today and then? And 20 years from now, that'll be the same thing. We won't have anything new to preach 20 years from now. But the better you know the gospel, the better you know the truth, the better you'll be able to handle it 20 years from now, whatever it is. Because that's the only thing you have to handle with.
Amen.
And you can buy all of your books. You can read all these big names that I never heard tell of before. These doctor so-and-so and so-and-so's. It's come out of these great universities. As Jim Canfield says, with degrees on the end of his name, that it looks like a cross-cut saw. You can read all of them. You want to. And get all their approaches, and if it's good, that's okay. You better check to see that they're tracking what Paul preached and the rest of them. Because I know some preachers right tonight, that's where they are, because they had access to a lot of books on the shelf. They started reading.
I'm sorry, Dale raised his hand a while ago when I forgot.
I just want to add one thing to what Stan and Jim Hitt said. I really respect all of our preachers. I don't really think that I don't. One thing I appreciate a great deal is it seems like we have a great rapport between old and young. I'm not afraid at all to walk up to most of our preachers and talk to them. I wonder sometimes if denominations are like that, if the addresses are like that. I like to think that they're not. I like to think that's something we have that they don't. I appreciate it. It makes it easier for me, and I'm sure it makes it easier for all your preachers.
Well, it's more this way now than it was even in our earlier years. Well, I wouldn't have any more thought of walking up to Brother Harper and started, discussing things with him. At least, discussing something that we were in disagreement over. Well, I wouldn't have more thought of that than anything in the world. However, he's as gentle as a lamb.
Feel like the children
in
disrespect, at least I hope no one thinks that's
for
us to do.
No.
I do appreciate what I'm saying.
Well, of course, we're all right.
Yes, we're all right.
I was during this meeting about
what we should be doing in preaching the gospel. And that's a question that comes up with young preachers sometimes. They get by themselves at their home congregation where they're working, and they start wondering, what must I do? What am I supposed to be doing? And I don't know, but I never have wondered about that. I was always taught that you get the message in your heart that Jesus died, you preach the truth, you love the church and love the word, and you'll never wonder what you're supposed to be doing. And you'll find ways of getting the gospel to people. And you'll do your best to get the word out. You won't have to worry if you've got the message in your heart. That's what I was taught. I do appreciate Linwood for doing this tonight. He's not one that, I don't think anyway, that talks about himself in a public way this way very much. You get him off by himself and start asking him questions, and he'll talk to you and talk to you about what you're supposed to be doing. But he's not one very much that feels easy in this sort of situation, talking about himself in front of a lot of the public way. And I appreciate him for doing this tonight. It's a very important element in this study. I'm very thankful.